Welcome into another Gun Talk Hunt podcast, and today I've got a very special guest on the line with me, and we all have those friends that we love to be around, we love to entertain ourselves with, because they are some of the most entertaining people we know, and they are the high-maintenance folks in your life, and we will talk way more about that. I can't wait to give him a ton of shit about his pack that he packs hiking around Oklahoma on a whitetail hunt with a 60 plus pound pack on your back cannot be easy. But our next guest has absolutely done that, and he came out better for it on the other side. But first, Gun Talk Hunt is brought to you by Springfield Armory and by Timney Triggers, the world's finest triggers. Now, a lot of you know, and we talk about it all the time, Timney Triggers has been making quality, affordable triggers in the U.S. since 1946. Right now, is the time to get deals. Deals on triggers. We're seeing deals all over the internet, and it does not stop at ammo or guns. It actually goes into triggers. So get your deal on a closeout trigger at timneytriggers.com. Great discounts and great folks. You can get triggers like the Benchrest replacement, Calvin Elite Remington Model 7, and the Mauser Sportsman. For all you Mauser fans out there, find your next trigger upgrade at timneytriggers.com/closeouts. All right, let's bring in my next high maintenance guest, Mr. Thomas Allen. How are you doing, buddy?
You know, it's real hard to listen. You go through that first intro without cutting in and wearing you out for all that. That's some heavy duty nonsense. Mostly true, but still nonsense.
But mostly true. I call him high maintenance out of love. And last year, Thomas actually was, we've been putting in for the Iowa tags forever. And that's kind of his home state. That's his breeding ground of the passion of the outdoors. And you took me up there. We blanked, but it wasn't for lack of trying.
No, it wasn't. And we both had our opportunities. We both shot, but you know, it's a different style of hunting than what you're used to in Oklahoma. I spent 5 years in Alabama, completely different from Iowa and Oklahoma in and of itself. But it's kind of what I grew up on, and it's really what I based a lot of my expectations and experience off of. And when you travel somewhere, you kind of have it in your mind it's going to go a certain way. And you and I both know Iowa went pretty well to expectations.
Yeah.
Didn't end the way we had wanted, but Oklahoma this year, while a similar story, was definitely a different experience.
Well, I feel like we were a little bit better on our game, and we kind of know each other's kind of hunting styles and our strengths. And the reason why I call Thomas, well, hold on a second. Let's back up a little bit. These guys are like, who the hell is this Thomas Allen guy? And why is he on Gun Talk Hunt podcast? All right. One, the guy knows how to hunt. Like I've learned a lot of little tips and tricks from Thomas Allen, and especially when it comes to muzzleloaders, this guy, he knows what he's doing. I've started integrating a measuring out, not like in the little pores, like measuring out on a scale my powders because of this man. Just learned a lot from him. But give a little bit of your background to establish who we're actually talking with.
Well, that's a loaded question. I mean, I could go into a lot of detail that might make people hate me, but here's the thing, Kevin. You and I have known each other for probably going on, I want to say 12, 13 years, worked in the outdoor industry, and I've built my career around the fishing side of the industry. And early on, even before that, I thought I would do the hunting side of things. That kind of made sense. I really get out of bed in the morning to hunt, and I love fish, but inadvertently, which is a whole nother story we don't have time for, I accidentally wound up in the fishing industry. And it turned out to be a blessing, because when fishing season's over, hunting starts. And so it kind of works well with my timeline. Whereas if I worked in the hunting industry, I'd be working all through the fall and maybe wouldn't have the amount of time I'd want chasing critters around. So yes, I worked at North American Fishermen for several years, worked at Bassmaster when I was in Alabama for 5 years. And now my family has moved home to Minnesota. And I work within fishermen now. So a outdoor professional, and I use that term loosely, that has a deeply rooted, long reaching passion for hunting. And really that's when you and I kind of got our start and getting to know one another, and we decided we had to set up some hunting trips together. And last year was the first one, this year was the second one, and I know it's going to be the first two of many.
Oh, absolutely. And what's funny about it is, so we got our, I mean, we were introduced to each other through the fishing industry, and Thomas puts it the best out of all. If you are looking for a career in the hunting industry and you want to wake up every morning and you want to go hunt, you go to the fishing industry. You go,
that's right.
You go completely opposite, because there is no way, there's no way I would sit there. I got to hunt all I wanted when I was in the fishing industry. And when my clients were primarily on the fishing side, I move over to the hunting and shooting side. And now my time starts getting divided, because you're shooting all during the fall. You're going on some industry hunts and stuff like that. So yeah, if you want to hunt and shoot more, go to the fishing industry.
Well, and one of the great things about it, Kevin, and this is something I love about the outdoors, and I think that anybody that has a passion for the outdoors will hear this and it will resonate, that there's a camaraderie that seems to come out, whether you're at the garage bush light level or you're working in the hunting industry with some of the biggest names. And I think that that's what really connects us all across the board, top to bottom. And I can't tell you, you were at a bunch of those, the number of fishing events, media events, press junkets, however you want to call it, or we would be together with other pro anglers or manufacturers or media entities. Once we sat down to dinner, like all the fishing talk stopped and we all started talking about hunting, and that really carried on through the evening as stories got, you know, lied about and embellished or whatever. But if you go to these hunting junkets and hunting events, you may talk a little fishing, but 90% of the time as the evening goes on, it stays in the hunting mindset. So there's a special brotherhood there, and that's really what, you know, got you and I into this, let's start doing some hunts together sort of thing. And I mean, here's what I'll say before we get into any details about this year's hunt. You can go on 10 hunts in a decade, and if you're lucky, you'll have one go the way ours.
Oh, there's no doubt. And so we're going to set this story up. So this is the 2020 Oklahoma whitetail hunt. And the way 2020 is going, it can suck on a bag of rocks, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because 2020 needs to end, we need to get on 2021 and start planning our next hunt. But we relish in this, and you brought your son along. And that kid, he is a hunting machine. Like, he doesn't stop, you know, and you've actually prepared him for this. You said, well, give us a rundown on how you prepared him once you told him, hey, we're going to go to Oklahoma.
Well, I have to start by at least making this point clear. I have a daughter, too, that is a year and a few months younger than Tommy. And by all comparisons, they're both equally as lethal.
Yes, absolutely. In fact,
the truth might be that my daughter is a little bit more lethal. She doesn't miss. If it steps out in front of her and her finger's on the trigger, turkey or deer, that sucker's in big trouble.
Yeah.
But in preparing Tommy for the hunt, I don't necessarily know that my daughter's going to be into the traveling hunt thing. We may try a turkey hunt back home to Iowa this year. We'll see. We'll kind of gauge what she's up for. But I know that the passion is there for Tommy, and that's really the starting point. You have to identify, is this kid going to stick it out for the duration of your hunt? And, you know, if Taylor and I go on a hunt, it's going to be a different scenario. We may hunt till 10 in the morning, and we may take half the day off and take a nap. You know, you kind of have to set your expectations based on their level of desire before you ever get there. And that's exactly what I did with Tommy. But I know, taking him hunting since he was 5, that he's ate up with this. Like, I prayed to the good Lord the day he was born that I would have a hunting partner. And you saw it, Kevin. He is dedicated. He will not complain. I can see it in his eyes some days when he's like, got to get out of bed again. But he's up with us. He's happy. You even introduced him to coffee, which thank you very much.
I'm so sorry for that. And I didn't introduce him to any coffee. I introduced him to my specialty, which is candy coffee. If you guys don't know,
it's a different flavor of hot chocolate.
Yeah, exactly. With a little caffeine in it. So you can make fun of me all you want. I don't care. I like candy coffee.
It's definitely girly coffee, but I guess if a boy's going to get into it, a hunting trip's the right place to start. But as far as mechanically speaking, we spent time at the range. I did receive a load of crap in your little intro there about carrying too much stuff, but you know, it's largely to cover me and my son, even though he has his own little pack, but there are things in there that I have that he may need or run into. But we didn't take two rifles. We took one because I knew it would be extra weight, and I didn't want to hear about that either. So we did minimize the load there, but I had him hunt with my rifle. And the reason we did that is I have a pretty neat setup. It's a Franke Momentum and a 6.5 Creedmoor, and it's topped with a Burris Eliminator 3 scope. And if you haven't hunted with that scope, I highly recommend it. It's technologically advanced. It takes a lot of the guesswork out. And I'll be open and honest here. Like, I'm kind of a archery nut and a muzzleloader guy. I understand ballistics there. I understand all that stuff. But, you know, your audience is very in tune to ballistics across how many different platforms of handguns and ARs and rifles. I mean, it's countless, right? Kevin asked me before I even got there, what are the ballistics on your Sun 308? I'm like, I don't know. It shoots straight at 100 yards. We're good, right? So we had a plan, but I knew that we were going to have to shoot long distances, and I'd rather Tommy not have to guess where to place the crosshairs. That's my son, Tommy.
That's right.
At 200 yards plus. So this Burris Eliminator 3 scope comes with a built-in rangefinder that I've zeroed, and it's all set up to shoot accurately with the 6.5. And so out to however far you want to go, I don't know what the long range on this, Kevin, you can help me out here, but I told Tommy, like, we're not shooting beyond 300 yards. And yep, that was more or less for him. But so we spent time shooting that thing. He was comfortable with it. We also sighted in his rifle, which is a Savage 308. And is it a 110, Kevin? Did you get a chance to look at that? Tell me what it was.
No, it was a Savage Axis. I asked him, I was like, okay, Well, what gun's he shooting? You know, I asked Thomas this, and he goes, I don't know. It's a Savage. It goes bang when I pull the trigger. And I was like, well, that is a Savage. I mean, fair, but there are different models, you know, so.
Well, it was a matter of him just burning some rounds. I wanted to make sure he was confident to shoot both of those. And he's pretty big for his age. At 13, he's 5'11 almost. And so I knew it was, he had the meat behind the gun to handle shooting just about any rifle. And honestly, that's the switch we've made this year, where he's shooting a 12 gauge and shooting man-sized rifles because he's a man-child. But
he really is.
And mechanically, he was prepared to shoot the weapons, but psychologically, what I told him, Kevin, on and on was, hey, you're going to be exhausted, you're going to be tired, you're going to be cold, you're going to be hot, you got all these things going on, but you have to temper that. You have to keep in mind that we're learning as we go. And I told him that it was different terrain, it was a different kind of hunt. I really didn't know what to expect, but I said it's different than what we're used to. So really, the preparation came down to me just like mentally and physically preparing him to shoot his rifle. And the same for what we're going to encounter once we're in the field.
Absolutely. And I'm going to let you guys in on a secret. As the property that we hunt, it is private and leased land. So this is, this is not a guided deal. And I can tell you right now, Thomas does not like to be guided, and I'm kind of the same way, but at least I understand, you know, if I go somewhere, I'm going to listen. That's for another time. However,
you know, that's fine. That's totally fine. And it maybe took a couple days for me to put my pride at a level where I could listen. But I came into this knowing there was going to be differences. But I honestly, Kevin, was not prepared, as you know, for all of the different scenarios you could encounter. And a lot of that comes down to bringing too much stuff. And
he said it here,
sitting
folks,
in a tree stand. I'm admitting it. I'm admitting it. In fact, I get tired of carrying it. But we do need to clarify one thing. I was hoping to film.
Yes.
And I did. I managed to get both hunts on film, but that means extra batteries. It means extra this and that, other pieces of accessories that go better in a backpack. But there are times, man, I wish I could just leave the backpack at home.
I know. But so I do want people to understand also that, like, I hunted this property. I've hunted it, and Ryan has been down there with me. He's hunted it. I've hunted this over two decades. So this is not anything new to me. But I hunted this property completely wrong for the better part of 12 years. So, you know, and that's my fault. That's me not getting out of my way until I got comfortable with moving and running and gunning, is what we'll probably call it throughout this podcast. But if you can't pick up and go, okay, we need to move now. And that's really almost like every single one of our hunts really kind of went that way. The bucks were on their feet. They were rutting. They were moving. They were moving all times of the day. I was seeing deer out, you know, midday, 1:30, you know, 2 o'clock. So they were moving. So my hunt, I'm going to breeze right through that. We saw a deer. It was the first night that Thomas got there. I got to make fun of him wonderfully. when he pulled up in his truck and it was filled to the brim, like he looked like the Clampett's headed out to Vegas or Los Angeles, wherever it was. But
that's fair. I'll let you have that one.
I mean, I felt that was pretty solid, except for the Vegas slip, but I thought it was pretty good. But he got ready. Like, and he said, he's like, KJ is going to take me about 30 minutes to get ready. He was ready in probably about 20, which I give him props for. And I kind of showed him where to go. And, you know, I went a different way, somewhere I've never sat before. I honestly thought I would see deer from far away. Anyway, saw a buck about 600 yards, closed the distance in the end, about 60 yards, dead deer. Then it was Tommy's turn. And this one, I think Thomas and I can probably mutually agree that this was the really important one. Me getting a deer was beside the point, and I really wanted Tommy and Thomas to really have a great hunt and for them to capture it. And I set them, and Thomas, you're going to have to take it over from here, because this is where it starts to get a little Western. Is when I say, when I say, hey, climb up on top of this boxcar and watch this mesquite field.
Well, it right away, I'm like, you're kidding, right? Because we're wearing bright orange. I'm a big boy. You know, we're presenting a big shadow against an open background, which we all know deer recognize, right? And anyway, so I was a little hesitant with that, but the minute I got up there, Kevin, and I even texted this to Jeremy, this is our friend we hunted with in Iowa. In fact, I think you had him on this program not too long ago.
He has been on the show, our good game warden buddy.
Yeah, a good friend of mine. Well, you just do what you're told sometimes, but he'll tell you this until the end of time. It was just Thomas Allen enough that it might work.
That's right.
I've been known to do some crazy things and they don't always work, but generally when you get to the point where you're climbing on top of a boxcar, things are about to get real Western. And honestly, we were there for 20 minutes and we saw what could have been and would have been a shooter buck on the last day, work right in as you had planned it. So, I mean, it was well executed plans. It was no fluke. And I'm sure you've sat up there before and I don't know if you've killed anything from there, but it had all the makings of a successful hunt. And you alluded to something earlier that I couldn't be more in agreement with. I was more interested in Tommy shooting a deer than anything. And I'd have been happy going home without one after the way his hunt ended up going. But you got a set up there, and things looked good. There were deer moving. And I was like, this could work. I had the camera running. Everything could work, and it would have made a great story in and of itself. But then I get this phone call. Hey, there's a real nice buck bedded over here. You need to get down. And at first, what'd I say?
You said, no, I'm not going to do it. We have deer right in front of us, which most of the times I would say, okay, but I just had a feeling. I was like, man, this could actually work out to be a great hunt because, you know, you've got to remember Thomas was running camera, trying to film a young hunter, trying to put him on deer. And that's tough. Juggling all three of those is really difficult, and especially with young shooters, you've got to be able to prioritize. You know, you've got to be able to juggle those balls in the air. You know, do you spend more time trying to film, or do you just spend more time trying to, you know, help your hunter?
It's a juggling act, that's for sure. You definitely have to prioritize, and I think that had this been the first time I tried to film Tommy, it would have been a bigger problem. But right. The bulk of both my son and daughter's hunts have been filmed. So it's no surprise to them. That's Tuesday as far as they're concerned.
Right.
But at that point I said no. And I think you called me about 10 minutes later and you said, get down, I'm coming. And yeah. I told Tommy, I said, look, we're moving. And in the back of my mind, and I'll be honest with you, Kevin, like that first time I thought, is this exactly what he's talking about? Is he calling me rigid? Is this what he means when he does that? And I thought that's exactly what's going on. So I need to probably listen. And I thought at that point, all right, if he's serious about this, he'll reach out again. and I'm going to have to listen. And that, yeah. I'm telling you, it was within minutes when I came to that realization, and we were down off the boxcar and in your truck in 5 minutes.
Yep. And I, cause I had called and I said, hey, you've got 30 minutes and this buck's going to be out of here. We need to get Tommy on him. And so we, and this, again, this is a spot that I've never set, never set. And I just happened to see a buck bedded down, and I know he's with a doe. I just couldn't see the doe. And you'll see that on Outdoor Pursuits. That is going to, you know, Thomas, his YouTube channel is great. You guys got to go watch it. But this hunt will be on there. And so I get him in the truck. We're heading to the ground, and I'm giving him the rundown. I've got a mile to explain what's going on and where this deer is and all this good stuff and what we're going to do. And we lined up a plan, had it ready to go. And I told Thomas, don't bring your backpack. You bring, I told him one camera. He ended up bringing probably about four or five. But that's beside the point.
Well, and let's clarify it. Look, these are GoPros that go in your pocket. Okay. You know, it's not like fair. I'm bringing a whole case worth of cameras.
Right. That's fair. But still, I said one camera. I was like, just bring your big camera. So anyway, so I'm helping Tommy at this point. I'm kind of going up and I'm guiding him. And he is behind the gun. Now, I took away some lessons from our time at FTW Ranch and some of their instruction. And I rested it on a really good mesquite tree, the front of the gun. And then I had the buttstock of the gun actually in a tripod. So that gun was not going to move. Once Tommy got on the gun and on the deer, man, he started breathing heavy. And I know we've all been there. We have all been there when we were staring at the biggest buck that we have in our sights and ever have. And buck fever starts to take over. And Thomas, give us a rundown of what you, because I honestly, I was kind of a jerk to your son, and I do apologize to him.
He's like me. He needs the direction sometimes. And honestly, like there, you know, we talked about this when you were talking about that event you attended where you almost need somebody else other than your father, your husband, whomever, like people closest in your lives are not always the best to give direction on these types of things.
Right.
He knows. Yeah. We practice breathing. He understands it all, but you're right. Staring at the biggest buck of his life and doing his best to remember what I've trained him to do to shoot. But right. At that point, you're looking at a milestone, and it's easy to kind of forget a lot of that. And so, and I'm sitting back going, you know, this is an opportunity for me to get a really good hunt film because I don't have to worry about those things. So right. Kevin took charge. Tommy took the, Tommy took the encouragement just fine. And we managed to get him under control. But what I love, Kevin, is that you say you were a jerk. You weren't. Tommy deals with me. He knows you're far nicer than I have been in the past. So he handled it just fine. He knew exactly what was going on. He knew you were right. And I think this is a good point, to get to some shooting technique that I noticed at the time. Like, he was not able to find that deer as easily inside of the scope as right. you or I would have, but granted, he's not spent a ton of time looking through brush,
right.
finding deer. And you made the decision to back off the magnification so he could see better.
Yes. And that was actually key. And that once I'm telling you, so I did say, I think the words that came out of my mouth was, Tommy, you got to cut that shit out. Get on the gun and breathe normal. And like, but it was like a light switch went off and it said, okay, I'm in predator mode now. And he goes, okay, I got it. And I kid you not, it was 30 minutes to the time that I told you, hey, he's going to be gone in 30 minutes. And all I hear was Thomas go from behind, he's up, he's up, he's up, he's up. That buck had stood up, and it wasn't 3 seconds later. That buck was laying back down in his bed.
Dead. Granted, the following moments are my favorite, but being able to go through that deer after everything was all said and done and see that the top of the deer's heart and both lungs were just in pieces. You know, that granted, the gun was sighted in, Tommy was confident shooting it, but it wouldn't have happened if he not listened to you, brought himself back down and followed through on the mechanics. And we talked about mechanics earlier, and I think that's critical, whether you're shooting for competition, whether right. you're shooting your upland gun at honkers or pheasants or whatever the deal is. When you go into kill mode, Kevin, that has to be second nature. It has to be instinctive. And if you haven't spent enough time shooting, or in hunting situation is to get that killer instinct out over top of what's freaking out. That's when failure happens.
Yep.
And we've all been there. Tommy's missed, I think, one deer his whole life, but it was largely because I was rushing him. As a 13-year-old, he's got some experience that I know most of the adult hunters I've hunted with don't have.
No, not at all.
I'm bragging on my son. I am. I mean that.
And you should.
But he went into kill mode after you pushed him to that point, and that was critical in that hunt.
Well, and I think, you know, I think those – I'm definitely not saying that I've done something, but I think those words will resonate with him. I think in the future he's going to go, okay, cut it out. It's time to go. And I think you're right. I think that was a pivotal moment actually in his hunting career, because now he's kind of overcome a lot. And I think we all see this as, you know, we see young hunters develop, or even, you know, hunters that are older that have just, you know, like done something major. I mean, you get over those little hurdles and then it becomes second nature.
Recognizing bad habits. And that's something I've talked to him about with shooting his bow. He's got one particular habit that even yesterday we're still working on again, where, you know, he doesn't put his finger on the trigger of the release. When he shoots, he pops it. And granted, yeah, he 8 out of 10 arrows are going to be 12 ring, but those other two are going to be, you know, high lung or spine or liver. And that's why I told him, I said, when you're in the heat of battle, when you're in the middle of that, milestone buck you're encountering, bow or rifle, your mechanics need to take over and make sure you do what you're supposed to do. And you don't want to run that risk of those 2 shots out of 10 taking over. So that was important. And, you know, there's the discussion about age, at what age are hunters ready to do this on their own, and what's too old, what's too young. And I personally think, Kevin, I don't want the government telling me when that is, whether that's state regulations or federal. I don't want anyone telling me that, because I know my kids are capable. However, the adult or the parent has to make the decision based on their child's abilities and their how they adapt to situations and think and act under pressure. That's all a personal decision. And my daughter shot a turkey at 5. That sounds ridiculous, but when she saw her brother, she's like, I want to try that. I'm like, no, baby, you're too small. She goes, well, let me shoot. So we did. We went and practice, Kevin, and she shot a 20 gauge like she was a boss at 5. So I say all that to say your own prerogative needs to take precedent here, right? You need to understand your kids, understand their capabilities. And with the amount of time I spend in the field and practicing with both my kids, I'm more than confident in putting them out there and having these types of environments and opportunities. And this is one that Kevin, I can't thank you enough for. And you said it earlier, I don't like to be guided. And I don't like to be told what to do, because I want to look at everything on my wall and feel like I did that. I had a big part in that. And honestly, that's a pride issue I had to deal with in this hunt, because it was more about Tommy having a great experience. And I needed to set myself aside for that. I really did. Yeah. And honestly, when we were leaving the truck to walk out to that spot, those thoughts ran through my mind as we were crossing that field. Like, this is not about you. This is about Tommy.
Yeah.
Let Kevin get Tommy to the right spot. And for that, Kevin, he'll never forget it. And neither will I.
Well, I won't either. Cause you know, when you see something like that go down and you know, I was just there to just help out. And that was all I was doing. And it's not something magic that I did. We hit the timing of the year right, where we were seeing shooter deer every set. And when you can get someone young on a deer like that, and man, it just all falls together. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing when everything lines up. But, It's something else, and we are running out of time, but Thomas, we're going to have to get, because you shot a gorgeous buck, and an old warrior buck standing out in the middle of a field, and that is going to be our story for another time, because we will have you back on, because I've got to get all squared away on muzzleloaders and talk about upcoming hunts. So and turkey season. So we're gonna shelve this story for later, but it is quite the story, and it doesn't take place on a boxcar.
It doesn't take place on anything. Let's get down to it. I mean, that's the reality. But look, my story is not nearly as important as Tommy's, but if anybody takes anything from this, is that kids are very malleable, they're teachable, and there are some tremendous experiences to be had out there. Even if it's just shooting for fun or you're actually in a hunting scenario, I'd recommend it to the nth degree. I love nothing more than getting my babies out in the field and having them hunt with me. And being able to share that on here with you has made it even better. But that is really what gets me out of bed in the morning.
Well, you're right. There is no greater thrill and something we both take pride in. And honestly, who we surround ourselves, we all take pride in it. And if you have any interest in getting youth into the shooting sports or the hunting sports, my email is an open line. I pray you guys reach out and I'll give you tips. I'll give you starting points. Just feel free to shoot me an email, kj@guntalk.com. I'm happy to help out in any way possible. Folks, thank you for joining a Gun Talk Hunt podcast. And don't forget, right now we are running a Gun Talk giveaway. It's our thanks giveaway, and you can win all kinds of prizes. Go enter at guntalk.com/win for your chance to win a Daniel Defense DDM4 V7 Brownells BRN180S AR-15. I mean, come on, there's a lot. There's first prizes number 1 through 4, first prizes 5 through 8. So there's a lot of chances to win some really great prizes out here from Timney, Hodgson, Double Star, Daniel Defense, and Brownells. But you guys, enjoy it. Have fun. Be safe. Gun Talk Hunt Podcast. We'll see you next time.